It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome back to, not back, it's just welcome to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning, 6 minutes past the hour, 45 degrees, and we have new and corporate, just there's so much happening and so much government, there's so much happening with the government today. So if you think about it, the Fed, and to some extent this is a good thing, but the Federal Reserve, they don't keep their mouth shut. And not only do they not keep their mouth shut, but they're here to communicate and communicate policy, but the individual members of the Fed won't keep their mouth shut. That's what I'm getting at. The individual members is not just Janet Yellen. It is Bullard and the whole group that it's almost as though they're fighting for attention. It's almost like they're a bunch of children in a family and they're trying to say, look, Janet, yeah, she gets most of the talk time, but I have an opinion too. So then you get these cross currents about one Fed official wanting to raise rates and one saying, hey, we should keep them low. And then we get the real boss, Janet Yellen, who comes out and says, hey, guys, this is what we're actually going to do. And then it creates these cross currents. And it not only happening here, but it's the same thing around the world. It's the European Central Bank. They continue to communicate what they think they're going to do, maybe. And the Bank of Japan, they continue to talk about what they're maybe going to do. And they're trying to, and they actually are in a negative interest rate environment, which means, what does that mean, by the way, for you? What does it mean for us? Well, negative interest rates, what that really means is that if you are a saver and you want to put money into a bank and expect some sort of traditionally, and again, I remember my economics book at University of North Carolina, I don't think there was a chapter on negative yields. It just didn't exist. Today, it exists all over the world. It means that I put money in a bank, and instead of the understanding of saying I'm going to get back 1% or 2% more than I put in, I enter into this contract understanding I'm guaranteed to get back less. That's what a negative interest rate is. So I have a negative 1% CD. That means I'd put $100,000 into a bank, knowing that upon maturity, I'm going to get back 99. That's what negative rates are. So it's a guaranteed loss. Why would this happen? Well, to some extent, why people would put their money in this environment is that they're at least guaranteeing themselves to keep most of their money. And that's the thought process. That's why you would do it. So instead of saying I'm going to lose 5% or 10%, I know that I'm guaranteed to only lose one. That's what a negative interest rate policy is all about. But the reason they're doing this, trying to stoke the economy. They're trying to stoke inflation. And they believe if they can do that, then they can get out of the economic malaise that they're in. And that's Japan right now. The problem with that is that it's a much bigger than the Fed, their Fed, the Bank of Japan, enacting this monetary policy. They've got bad demographics. They have bigger issues in the country that are leading to this slow and really backwards growth. So that is the cross current all over the globe. And it has to do with the government. There's also government rules, the new corporate inversion rules. What are corporate inversions? Why do you care? Let me go back to why we care about negative interest rates, by the way. So if the rest of the world is bringing down rates, it's difficult for our Fed to have higher interest rates. So our rates are low. And it means that for savers, for those of you who just want to put money in a CD to be safe, it means that you're going to get close to a zero return as far as the eye can see. For not just the next week and the next 6 months, but for a considerable period of time from today into the future, saving rates will stay very low in the United States. And quite frankly, we'll be lucky if they don't go negative. That's what makes all of this income investing even more important. So the theme here on Money Matters, it has been for years, long before we had a negative interest rate world, is how do you generate steady returns or steady income from a portfolio? Meaning that I know that I can get dividends from stocks. As long as those stocks stay in business and have some sort of financial health, I can get steady quarterly dividend payments from a stock like Lockheed Martin or Southern Company, Procter & Gamble, General Electric, Home Depot, Coca-Cola, DuPont. But I also know that I can get interest from bonds. So bond interest now has been brought lower because interest rates in general are lower around the world. But I can still get 2% and 3% and 4% from what would be considered high quality companies that aren't going out of business anytime soon. When I get into the 5 and 6 and 7% interest range out of a bond, I know that I'm getting that from a company that's got bad credit. It doesn't mean that you can't invest in high yield. It doesn't mean that it's necessarily even a bad place. But just know that if you're getting 5 and 6%, you're getting it from a company that has less than perfect credit. So I can get interest from various places around the world. Corporate bonds, government bonds, municipal bonds, high yield bonds, floating rate bonds, treasury inflation protected bonds. So there are all of these areas to try to generate steady interest around the world. It's not just putting money in a bank. And that's how we combat this low interest rate environment that we're stuck with it. There's nothing we can do about it. We've got to figure out places to combat this low interest rate world. Then I've got another area, another bucket that pays me income, and those are distributions. Distributions, that just means it's another form of cash flow. So legally, the government or the IRS determines that that's a dividend and that's interest. But over here, that portion of cash flow that you just received on XYZ security, we're going to call that a distribution. So it's just labeling how I'm getting my cash. And distributions will come from, again, various places, closed-end funds. They pay out distributions. If you own an MLP, a pipeline company, or a pipeline energy storage company, they pay out a cash flow that's called a distribution. So then if you have a portfolio as a retiree or a pre-retiree, someone who's trying to get there to a place where I can stop working and have my money now generate an income for me without buying an annuity or without buying some product that an insurance company is selling me, which, by the way, another governmental change I'll get to from this week, the Department of Labor changed the rules on who can sell you what or what they can't sell you anymore. But I put all these together, dividends and interest and distributions, and collectively, I get a yield. That's simple. I get a portfolio yield or cash flow that I can either spend when I'm in retirement, and it's the predictable part of how I invest. I still can't predict the market in a week, a month, a year, the level of the US stock market. I can have a good sense of guidance and earnings and future, but I don't know what's going to happen in the emotional week ahead or the emotional month ahead or the emotional quarter ahead, because markets are driven well beyond fundamentals and well beyond earnings. They're driven by people's emotion, and they always will be. What isn't driven by emotion is that capture of income. Steady interest, steady dividends, steady distributions, they add up to a portfolio yield. And in the world we live in today, that gives me a lot of comfort. If I'm getting yield from quality companies that aren't going anywhere in my lifetime, meaning they're going to survive regardless of what happens here and in China and in Japan and in Europe, then I feel very comforted by the fact that these companies have been doing business for 20 and 50 years and probably will be for the next 20 and 30 and 40 years. So that to me is how I find comfort in what I'm investing in. And that goes back to owning quality companies, which has been the theme for 2016, quality companies that, quality stocks and quality bonds. And then that backdrop that has been, it's more than a theme here on Money Matters. It's just an underlying philosophy. It's a belief in how we invest. This is not the only way you can do it. There are plenty of other overarching investment philosophies. Some are completely growth-oriented, value, growth at a reasonable price. There are tons of ways to become or approach investing. The way we approach it here on Money Matters and have for many, many years, it's just an income approach. And it just means that I want to know the steady dividend yield that's coming from the collective portfolio. And if I know that, I know at least I'm going to have 3 or 3.5 or 4% in the world that we live in. And by the way, a couple years ago, it wasn't rare to have a portfolio that had a 5% yield. Go back even further, 6% yield. But remember, collectively, central banks around the whole globe have brought down interest rates lower and lower and lower to a point where what were historically low rates a year ago or 2 years ago are haven't got any higher. In fact, in some cases, they're even lower. So that's the environment, and that's the challenge. That's the uphill battle that we're faced with. But there's still plenty of ways to generate 3 and 3.5 and 4%, depending upon how much risk you want to take with your collective investment portfolio. So that, to me, is a very important concept for you to not forget. In a world where you're constantly bombarded with brand new news and brand new laws and brand new economic updates, it's helpful to go back to one underlying philosophy that you know that, hey, it doesn't matter what happens in the economy this week or this month or even this year, as long as I have this steady overarching philosophy of income, it goes a very, very long way, which also brings up something called yield at cost. This is a concept that we talked a little bit about last week, and I got lots of emails about this. So I want, and today here in the bottom of the half hour on Money Matters, I'm going to go through a couple more examples of something called yield at cost. I know when I go to Yahoo Finance or Google Finance or any place that tracks equities or stocks, I can very quickly see the price of the stock versus how much it pays per year. And you divide those two, you divide your dividend payment per year divided by the price, and you get your yield. So I know that if a company like Lockheed Martin is paying $6.60 today divided by the price, it's got a yield of about 3%. But what's really powerful as an investor is to understand what you may have paid for that same company 5 years ago or 10 years ago or even further back than that, so that you can start to understand this really important concept and power of yield at cost. If I have a company that's ratcheting up that dividend slowly per year, then I can look back and see, hey, this is what I originally paid and this is what it's yielding today. Because back then, let's say Lockheed Martin was paying $2 a share, today is paying $6. Now, on those original shares, I have what's called a yield at cost or yield at original cost, which means that's how we get dividend payments in the, they're not necessarily, today they're not paying a 3%, but relative to what I paid for 10 years ago, now we're talking about 8% and 10% and 12%, depending upon what underlying action that company's done from a dividend perspective. So we're gonna talk about that very important concept here on Money Matters. By the way, we're live here on this beautiful Sunday morning, Masters weekend, Masters Sunday, it's the final round. Your financial questions and calls today here in the studio, the number 404-872-0750. We'll answer your pension questions, lump sum payment questions, Social Security questions. Remember, the April 30th, 2016 deadline is this month. Don't forget the April 30th Social Security deadline. And again, your questions about that here, we're live in the studio, 404-872-0750. You're listening to Money Matters here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. So, time for a weather update. Beautiful spring weather, Masters weekend, mostly cloudy, 0% chance of rain, high in the mid-60s, low in the mid-40s. Our weather brought to you by Shoemate Heating and Air. Okay, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. As you, I don't know if you know this or not, but I wrote about this in AJC a week or so ago, and I'll reiterate this again because there's 20 days left. You have 20 days. If you will be, so this is for anyone who is 60, anyone that will be 66 or older before April 30th this month, listen up, 20 days left. Social Security deadline, April 30th, if you will be 66 or older before this April 30th, you can still file and suspend if you would like to preserve the right to two things. One, what's called a retroactive lump sum option. Again, this is the first one. You can preserve the right to still do a retroactive lump sum option. If you don't, this option is just going away if you won't hit that age by the April 30th. So don't worry about this. Don't call me in panic if you're just, and I've had a lot of these panic emails. Somebody's 62, 63, doesn't matter. If you're not 66 by the end of this month, it doesn't apply to you anyway. But if you're 66 or older, then you can still file and suspend if you want to preserve the right to do what's called a retroactive lump sum option. Which means, by the way, when you're getting Social Security payments 2 or 3 years in, you can go back to them and say, hey, you know what? I suspended. I wasn't getting paid because I was waiting for a higher payment. Well, I want to get the whole lump sum of those 2 or 3 years back. Number two, it preserves the right for your spouse's ability to collect while you have suspended or your benefit is suspended. Those are the two things that you still have the right to preserve if you file and suspend before the end of this month. That's what we're talking about here. All right, you're listening to Money Matters. Your calls about Social Security and anything else on the Financial Sun, 404-872-0750. Stay tuned right here, News 95.5 AM 750 WSB.
Now back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Let's call it a beautiful Sunday, because it is, and it's Master Sunday. And I know you'll be out checking out the Masters. This is a beautiful time of year. It's a wonderful time for our state to shine, really. Augusta, one of the most beautiful places in the world. And the weather today should be continue to be good. Let's call it almost great. Better than good. Let's call it that. So mostly cloudy, 0% chance of rain, high mid-60s, low mid-40s. Weather brought to you by Shoemate Heating and Air. And the number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. We've got calls. Actually, we had a couple good people didn't hold. Okay, that's all right. Now our phone line's open. You have questions about dividends, distribution, interest rates, Social Security questions, how this relates, how all of this relates back to your 401k. Really, that's what matters. Then we're here in the studio to answer those questions. The new corporate inversion rules, the Pfizer and Allergan deal blew up this week because of the brand new Department of Labor rules. There's also new Department of Labor rules about the, as far as conflicts of interest and the fiduciary rule on retirement plans. What does it mean now? Is your broker now a fiduciary, or are they only a fiduciary on certain accounts? Have you heard about the rule? Well, the Department of Labor came out with they revised what's called the conflicts of interest rule. And I don't think a lot of people understand this. I know people don't understand it. You don't understand it, because if you ask 100 guys in the investment community that are brokers in real life, is what they do for a living, they don't even understand it. There's a lot of misconceptions around these two very important proxies. One has to do with whether you are a fiduciary or and how you serve your clients versus being just what's called looking at your suitability or best interest. And it does sound like it's an easy thing to think about, because you would think that everyone is looking out for your best interest in the investment world. You know, anybody that's a financial advisor, but that's where the confusion is. Like, who's an financial advisor? Is a stockbroker an advisor? Is a registered investment advisor an advisor? Of course. Is an insurance agent an advisor? So there's this broad term of financial advisor around the world, and that's what makes it confusing for you as the consumer. Where are you getting your advice? Well, you would think that everyone's out to look for your best interest, but for years and years, for call it a century, for goodness sakes, the registered investment advisors, particularly the fee-only world, they have been, and this is the world I'm in, we've been held to a higher standard for many, many years. We're what's called a fiduciary. But brokers and insurance agents, along with other people that are in the advice business, have had, again, still called an advisor, have been only held to what's called a suitability standard, which they're different. Believe it or not, a fiduciary versus holding someone to a suitability standard are different. And what the Department of Labor tried to do this week in their brand new rules is hold that first group I talked about, it just general financial advisors, brokers, to now what's called a higher standard, a fiduciary standard. Legal definition of a fiduciary is to put your interest first So now these new rules are saying that on retirement accounts, so retirement accounts meaning IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, anything that's in the retirement category, and this does not apply to a regular after-tax investment account. This applies to retirement accounts. Now those brokers and agents have to now act as fiduciaries. That is what is now this gargantuan change. So the new rule should, and this is a projection here, save investors money over the next decade. Let's call it, some estimates are up to $40 billion in savings over the next decade. And it's aimed to take out, this rule is aimed to take out these really heavy fees. So all these heavy, I call it seven-layer dip of fees, where you're in an investment account that owns mutual funds that now you're having a charge on, and then there's other charges on that, and there's an annuity, all wrapped into one gigantic seven-layer dip of fees. Well, the Department of Labor is saying, look, that's not fair to you as a consumer. We're going to strip that out, or we're going to attempt with more stringent rules to try to strip some of that out. So that might get rid of or change these really high-priced annuities that I still see people bring into my office every day. Hey, Wes, what do you think about this annuity? Oh, well, it might be good if it didn't cost you 4% a year. The premise is great. I love all these guarantees and these bells and these whistles, but 3.5% a year, so it's probably not that great. And expensive mutual funds with fees on top of fees. So the world's changing. So now brokers, at least on your IRA and your 401k and your Roth account, now brokers are going to have to act as fiduciaries in the future, which means legal definition, put your interest first versus what is they have been held to what's called just a suitability standard, where they actually have a duty to their firm first and what's in the firm's best interest relative to the client. Hey, as long as it's, quote, suitable for my client, meaning it's a pretty good idea for my client, they were still beholden to the firm's interest. Now that's what's shifting and changing. So there's a lot happening in the world of financial advice. Who does what? What's a registered investment advisor? What's a stockbroker? What's an insurance agent? Well, all these people out there are in the business of giving out some sort of advice and some sort of guidance on what you should own as an investor. How do you get to retirement early? Well, and as you know, if you listen to Money Matters, there are infinite paths that will take you there. There's lots of ways to get there and make it work. And there are a lot of rabbit holes you can go down that end up leading nowhere or leading to bad decisions and bad choices that you end up not getting and reaching your goals. So the key here is to help you understand who you're getting advice from. And very simply, for years, there's nothing now, even with these new rules, there's nothing new to the registered investment advisory group that already has acted for years and years and years as fiduciaries. So any firm that's a registered investment advisor, I'm not some magical space that only me and my firm are in. There are dozens and dozens of registered investment advisory firms right here in Georgia, and there are thousands of them across the country. So there's, I would call it almost half of the entire investment advice industry, and growing, by the way, is already doing this. They've already been fiduciaries. They're already looking out for your best interest, you first. It's the Wall Street, it's the bigger bank, bigger investment firm, Wall Street group that is now catching up to that here in the year 2016. It's finally starting. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750. You can also call me 1-800-WSB-TALK. We are live here in the studio on this beautiful, relatively nice Sunday morning, Masters Sunday. Dave joins us from Smyrna. Good morning, Dave. Welcome to the show. How can we help, my friend?
Good morning. Yes, I have a couple questions here.
Well, let's start with one.
Okay.
For time's sake, Dave.
First question concerns my thrift savings plan. I intend to retire within 18 months, and my present allocation is 41% within the G fund, 31% in the F fund, and 28% split among the common stock, the small stock, and the international.
CSI, got it.
Yes.
So what Dave is calling about is I think, one of the very best retirement plans out there. And that's the government's TSP account, which stands for Thrift Savings Program. And the TSP is great because it's so simple and so low cost that it really, really, I've seen good results over the years. And it's maybe overly simple for some people, and it doesn't address specific needs, I think, when you get into retirement. But when you're accumulating, there's a lot of power and simplicity. And quite frankly, TSP does that. And it's got five options. Now, there's other options because they have life cycle funds now. And those life cycle funds are combinations of the five choices, but Dave's referring to GF, government and fixed income. Those are the two. That's basically, those are both bond portfolios. And then CSI, common stock, small cap, international, CSI. So for you, Dave, you are 72% in those ultra conservative options. And I say ultra conservative because the yields on those now, government bond yields are so low right now because of interest rates. We talked about this earlier in the show. Interest rates are negative around the world. They're not negative here, at least yet. But those are almost like you could almost refer to those as a stable value fund, particularly the G fund. So the 28%, that's really the only place you're going to be able to have potential appreciation. But headed into retirement in 18 months, I think you're somewhat on the right track. Now, the question for you, though, is your allocation and what does your yield look like? I would suspect that if you've been doing this for a little while, you've seen very little movement in the value of your TSP account. Is that correct?
Correct.
So it's kind of just sitting there like watching paint dry.
Mostly.
And that's okay because at least you haven't lost any money. But I do, if you're going to be, how old are you?
64, soon to be 65.
When you hit 66, do you also have a monthly pension you're going to get?
Yes, I have an annuity from them, yes.
Then here's a question. How much do you think you're going to rely upon your other savings to supplement income? Or do you have enough in pension and potentially some Social Security that gets you to the level of spending you're going to need?
Yes, I'm in the process of evaluating that. I can avoid drawing immediately upon the TSP. I have enough money in reserve to tide me over probably for another 12 months after I retire.
Got it. Here is one really important thought when it comes to how you use which accounts when you get into retirement is that, and I see this very often, is the main vehicle many of us in America have been able to use, Dave, and Dave, you're probably no exception, is a deferred retirement plan. Referred to as a defined contribution plan, basically a 401k, and the TSP is effectively the government's version of a 401k. So it's a vehicle where you've been able to put $24,000 a year away in every year. So it very often becomes your biggest asset. The problem with that is that if you get into retirement and you've got, let's say, $500,000 in TSP or $1 million in your retirement plan and very little money saved in an after-tax way, then what happens is you get to the point where every time you need any money, you're going to pull out of your retirement plan and then you're taxed on it. So I see couples, they say, well, I've got this $100,000 here in pre-tax money, but then most of my money is after tax. I'm going to just spend that pre-tax money first, and then I'm left with this big IRA or 401k. The problem with that is that you pigeonhole yourself into only using retirement money, which keeps your tax bracket high. Think of your after-tax, your after-tax money, so your non-retirement account money, as very sacred as you get into retirement, Dave, because that's the money that you can pull out. It's already been taxed, so you can use it without having a high tax bill. So I just want to caution you on that and in the way, in the sequence of which accounts you really use so that you can keep your tax bracket low. Hey, we've got to go to a quick break. You're listening to Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. I have an AM 750 WSB.
Please remember, I still want you.
I believe the kitchen is the new family room. It's where you live.
Kitchen renovations are one of the highest return on investment home improvement projects. Plus, you get to enjoy it every day. Hi, I'm Leslie Karp.
And I'm Michael Karp, owner of Platinum Kitchens and Design. We deliver a better renovation experience with our exclusive Platinum process.
First, we come to your home at no charge. We need to listen to you and see your space to make great recommendations.
Later, we present customized CAD designs of your perfect kitchen.
Next is a complimentary design consultation to choose the right colors, materials, and products.
Finally, your personal project manager ensures the job is done right.
Platinum Kitchen's exclusive Platinum process creates happy, stress-free customers with beautiful, high-quality kitchens that look straight out of the design magazines, but don't cost an arm and a leg.
Schedule your free in-home kitchen design consultation to experience the Platinum process. 678-455-0875, PlatinumKitchens.com.
My husband's having a heart attack.
Put the heel of your hand in the center of his chest, right between the nipples. One, two, three.
I don't think she's breathing. Oh, God almighty.
In America and around the world, coronary disease is the number one killer.
About a third of patients, the first event is sudden death.
Pretty scary, right? My friend and the wife of my former co-worker, Royal Marshall, his wife, Annette Marshall, is here with me.
That's what happened to Royal. All he said was, I feel sick and I need some cold water. And that was it.
The Widowmaker.
Ladies, take it from me. You need to make yourself an appointment and make one for him, and you both go to Virtual Imaging. 15 minutes will save your life.
The only EBCT scanner in Georgia is at Virtual Imaging, providing you with a free heart scan with few minimum requirements, 770-730-0119, virtualimaging.com. And here are Royal's little girls.
Please get your scans.
WSBB-F.